Welcome to Advanced Nuclear, the official podcast of UCAN Power, where leading experts, innovators, and policymakers explore the latest developments shaping the future of nuclear energy.
Welcome to the Advanced Nuclear Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Howe for UCAN Power. We're here to talk about bringing cutting-edge nuclear technologies to market to bolster our energy and national security. As we've heard from previous guests, developing new nuclear power capacity is vital to meeting growing energy demands in America and across the world, both for electricity generation and for a variety of other industrial uses. A number of new advanced reactor designs are entering the market to fill these power needs. In terms of vernacular, advanced nuclear reactors are known as either Generation 3 Plus, which are enhanced light water reactors, similar in design to the large units in use today across the nation, or Generation 4, which are reactors that are not cooled by water and that typically have physical and operational attributes different than a light water reactor design. For Generation 4, there's three general families of reactor technologies: metal-cooled, such as those that use liquid sodium as a coolant; molten salt, where the fuel or coolant or both is in liquid form; or gas-cooled reactors, which are what we'll be talking about today. An American company, X-Energy is one of the world's leaders in developing high-temperature gas-cooled reactors. X-Energy is based in Rockville, Maryland, and was one of two companies competitively selected for a substantial U.S. government cost share for their initial reactor deployment under the Department of Energy's Advanced Reactor Demonstration Program. I've had the privilege of getting to know the X-Energy team over the years, and they're a very impressive company with a highly talented leadership team. Not only are they developing a mid-sized advanced reactor, the XE-100, but also building a specialized fuel production capacity as well as novel reactor designs for mobile military and space applications. If you want to see exciting developments in the advanced nuclear industry, look no further than X-Energy. You can find them on the web at x-energy.com. Our guest today is Harlan Bowers, and he's been part of X-Energy's leadership for the past decade. Today, he's a senior vice president and serves as the program director for X-Energy's Advanced Reactor Demonstration Program project, which encompasses the deployment of X-Energy's first four reactors. Harlan is responsible for the design, licensing, and construction of these four reactors and their supporting infrastructure, a massive undertaking. Further, he also oversees the development of the company's first fuel production facility to make the tri-structural isotropic fuel, or TRISO, needed to power their technology. This all makes Harlan one of the busiest people in our industry. It's a huge challenge, but Harlan's the man to meet it. He's a Virginia Tech-trained engineer with an MBA from the University of Maryland and has extensive experience in project management and business development in the high-tech sector, particularly in the aerospace industry. He's also a person of the highest integrity who tells it like it is with no spin and is incredibly knowledgeable, which has made him one of the advanced reactor industry's most trusted and respected leaders. It's a real honor to have him on this show. So, Harlan, thank you for taking the time to join us on the Advanced Nuclear Podcast. We're really grateful that you could find the time to be here.
Jim, thank you so much for the opportunity. I look forward to the discussion.
Super. Well, let's start at the beginning. What were you doing before joining X-Energy, and what made you make the leap into the advanced nuclear industry?
That's a great question. As you noted, experience in business development and program management, and all that experience previously was in the aerospace industry. I started as an aerospace engineer working with RCA, developing communication satellites. I transitioned to the DC area and worked on Hubble Space Telescope servicing for a long period of time. Worked for an organization called Satellite Servicing Division at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center as a contractor. Had a fantastic time supporting cutting-edge space science and earth science missions. In that 2015 timeframe, my CEO, a gentleman named Cam Gafarian, who we'll talk about Cam from time to time during this podcast, asked me if I would help a small company that he had started in 2009 win a Department of Energy cooperative agreement. And so he asked me to come over to X-Energy for a couple months, help that team develop a winning proposal, and then transition back over to continue my aerospace career. And that was, as I noted, 2015, and I never left. So I've been working in the nuclear industry ever since then.
Terrific. And so I briefly described your responsibilities. First, did I get them right? And could you kind of explain to our listeners what you do at X Energy at this point?
Yeah, again, great question. I've had a number of different positions. I consider myself, and I believe that my management considers me to be a good utility player and a problem solver. And so as issues pop up, as challenges arise, I move from challenge to challenge, and I'm happy to play that role within the organization. I have been the president of X Energy and served that role for the first several years. When the microreactor opportunity came about, that was the Strategic Capabilities Office competitive procurement for a microreactor concept. I took on the responsibility within business development as the capture manager for that pursuit. And upon award of that contract, the team looked at me and said, nobody knows more about this contract than you do. So why don't you be the program manager for the microreactor contract? I took that role on for about 3 years. And when that wrapped up, they asked if I would move over to Project Longmont, which is the official name for our ARDP, Advanced Reactor Demonstration Program. So what that indicates is, a little bit of business development when appropriate, a little bit of program management when appropriate, and my current assignment is bringing that Advanced Reactor Demonstration Program to fruition.
So a little bit about the company. First, how big is it? Because when I met X Energy, it was literally maybe three dozen people. Where are you today when it comes to headcount?
Going back to 2015 when I was asked to help with the proposal, five or six employees and probably a similar number of consultants that were, anywhere from full-time to part-time. With that early award in 2016, that enabled us to ramp up to around 25 people. Where are we today? If we haven't crossed the 600 employee line, we're really, really close to it. We've been doing a great bit of growth since the Amazon announcement in October of last year, and I think we're right around 590. And I think on Monday we have another 12 to 15 that are onboarding, and I think we'll cross the 600 line next month.
That's truly incredible, that much growth and with so much to do, because not only are you developing the XE100, which is your kind of mainstay, I would call it like a mid-sized advanced reactor compared to some of the other competitors out there, but you've got still, you're working on your TRISO fuel fabrication, and are you still working on the space and the mobile microreactor projects? Are they still active within X Energy?
Yeah, so let's take them, we'll take them one at a time. TRISO X first, we have set up TRISO X as a wholly owned subsidiary. In part, we did that because we recognized the importance of being able to sell tristructural isotropic-based fuel to the market, right? It's not just to provide TRISO fuel to X Energy reactors, but to provide it to any and all comers, the reactor technologies that want to employ TRISO fuel. There are, I can count at least two other, domestic producers of commercial TRISO fuel. BWXT and Kairos are currently developing different variants of TRISO. On the microreactor side, we have continued to be under contract with Strategic Capabilities Office. The original concept for Pele, which was the Army's potential Army application of a deployable mobile microreactor, was a very highly mobile, transportable solution, right? It was all based in ISO containers, loaded into a C-17, fly it to a foreign destination, set it up and have it operating within 3 days. And so that's the solution that we work on today. That's the solution that we believe, while applicable as a first deployment at Army bases, ultimately could have real application in a commercial sense for remote mining activities or other remote communities. Let's talk the space applications for just a moment. How did X-Energy get involved in NASA space applications? We are a high temperature gas cooled reactor company, and so if you look at the nuclear thermal propulsion applications, you're taking a gas, you are superheating that gas, and then accelerating it through a nozzle to create thrust. That is what a high-temperature gas-cooled reactor does. The only difference is for a electricity generation application, you're taking that very high-temperature fluid, in our case helium, and running it through a heat exchanger of some kind, as opposed to accelerating it through a nozzle and making thrust. So it was actually a recognition on the part of NASA that we likely, X-Energy had technology and knowledge that would be applicable to looking at thermal propulsion applications and opportunities. So they initially approached us and said, are you interested in doing this kind of work? Absolutely, we were. There's a number of folks that work within X-Energy that have their heritage on the aerospace side. And so we jumped at the opportunity to support that. Today the application for nuclear thermal propulsion is really led by DARPA, and they're pushing that forward. We do continue to be involved in something called fission surface power, which is how do you generate fission electricity on the surface of the moon. We're super interested in the space applications, but they're not going to make or break the company, right? What makes or break the company is primarily the XE-100, and closely behind that is the opportunities around microreactor.
That's all a great overview. Before we talk more about the XE-100, I just want to point out that the U.S. since the 1950s has been working on hydrogen-propelled nuclear rockets. Yes. And unfortunately, we've never quite gotten there. I understand that the DARPA project is kind of in a little bit of limbo right now as the new administration makes some operational decisions and acquisition decisions. So hopefully that will move forward. But on the XE-100, can you just talk about it in layman's terms? Some of our listeners are not nuclear engineers, whatever, but just, how big is the reactor? How does it work? How does the technology all come together?
Okay. So let's talk, somewhat agnostically in regards to power levels, right? How does a high temperature gas cool reactor work? And I want a little bit more distinction for us is that we are a pebble bed high temperature gas cool reactor. So what is a pebble bed? So it starts with the form of the fuel. And we've mentioned tri-structural isotropic fuel already, but we haven't defined it for the listeners. Tri-structural isotropic is taking very small grains of uranium. In our particular case, it's something that's called uranium oxycarbide. It is a combination, not a chemical combination, but a mechanical combination of uranium oxide and uranium carbide. And so this grain is about the size of a poppy seed. And so you take these grains of uranium that we refer to as kernels, and you put them into what's referred to as a fluidized bed. And so I've got the thousands of these kernels of uranium oxycarbide in a fluidized bed, and so you've got gases flowing through this bed, and so the particle, the kernels are kind of flying around in the air, and then as you insert different gases into that fluidized bed, it applies a coating of material on top of that kernel of uranium. And so you do that a number of times. And so we build up four coatings on top of that kernel to make something that we call a TRISO particle. Now, those coatings are a pyrolytic carbon. And so there's two layers of pyrolytic carbon, followed by a layer of silicon carbide, and then a final layer of pyrolytic carbon outside of that. The most important layer in that is the silicon carbide. And what the silicon carbide does is create a hermetic seal around the uranium that retains different fission gases and isotopes that are created during the fissioning process. It is, in essence, the containment that's required to keep in those the bad stuff, so to speak, that's created during the fissioning process. It is the reason that we don't need a containment structure around the reactor for a high-temperature gas-cooled reactor. All of the retention, which is referred to by the NRC as functional containment, is done at that particle level. Now, so once I'm done with one of these particles, it's about a half a millimeter in diameter. Now, I'm going to take 10,000 of those particles, TRISO particles, and I'm going to press them into a fuel form. Now, and we mix it with a graphite matrix and we press it into a fuel form. Our particular fuel form is a pebble. So it is a 6-centimeter diameter pebble that has 10,000 TRISO particles in it. And so what is 6 centimeters? It's about the size of a cue ball. So we've got the 10,000 particles inside a cue ball-sized pebble. I take these pebbles and I pile them up inside a reflector. And once I get to a certain number of these pebbles, the fissioning process begins. What happens when the fissioning process begins? Those pebbles start to heat up. Now, because they're in graphite, which is a ceramic, they can get extremely hot. And so our pebbles, you know, on average, are somewhere between 850 degrees centigrade to 1,000 degrees centigrade. Now, what do you do with that heat? You want to extract that heat from the pebbles. And so we flow a gas into that pile of pebbles. The gas that we use is helium. And so the gas enters at the top of the reactor at about 250 degrees centigrade. It flows through that circuitous path through the pebbles, extracting the heat. And it exits the reactor core at 750 degrees centigrade. What do we do then? We take that very hot helium and we take it into a heat exchanger to extract the heat from it. In our particular case, we're a Rankine cycle, and so we're taking it into a steam generator and turning that very hot helium and transferring that hot helium, the heat from that helium, into making very high temperature, high pressure steam. With that steam, there's two options. One is to run it to a steam turbine generator and make electricity. And the other option is to pipe that very hot steam to an industrial process. And that leads us to ARDP and the Dow Chemical relationship and partnership that we have and why that's so special for industry. But I'll stop there, let you ask me any questions on the technology.
No, that's a great overview. And frankly, as a non-engineer, I actually understood everything you said. So thank you for keeping it simple for guys like me. But very well done. But how much electricity can you crank out from one XE100?
Yeah. So let's start with thermal power, right? And so how much thermal power can an XE100 module create? 200 megawatts thermal is the answer to that question. The efficiency that we have in our system is about 37 to 38% efficient on converting that to electrical energy. And so the output of that 200 megawatt thermal reactor module is 80 megawatts electric. Now, 80 megawatts electric is a little on the small side for you know a particular application, and so we our baseline design, our standard XE100 plant design is four reactor modules in a plant. 80 times 4, 320 megawatts is the output of that plant, which puts us very much in that competitive sweet spot with the BWRX 300, the AP 300, the Kairos reactor, KP 450, if I remember correctly, and as well as the SMR from Holtec. We're all looking at that, you know, approximately 300 megawatts electric as the output of the plant.
And I'm thinking because you've got four reactors in the same kind of module or system, it's kind of in the sweet spot also where the data center industry might be interested in this because, you know, they build out in a modular fashion and they don't need necessarily an AP1000. They might eventually as they keep adding data centers to their complex, but maybe this is a good opportunity for X Energy as well. I'm just throwing that out there.
We learned something in our engagement first with Dow, and then quickly after that in our discussions with the hyperscalers, in which ultimately ended up with our investment relationship with Amazon, which is that having four reactor modules in a 300, in our case, 320 megawatt plant gives the user of that power a very high reliability, opportunity for very high reliability. And so I'll use Dow as the example. And within nuclear industry, we always talk about availability. Right, and the existing fleet's ability to provide 93% to 94% availability on an annual basis for delivery of electricity. The key factor for Dow in an industrial application is reliability. How reliable can I assure that either electricity or steam is delivered to my industrial process? Because if I lose either one and my industrial process goes down, I can't just start it back up again, right? It is a tortuous process to restart an industrial process. In their particular case, it's a manufacturer of plastics. So being able to have 99% or higher reliability on the delivery of steam or electricity is a very important factor to those customers, to those users. It's similarly for the data centers, right? I mean, they want to operate on a 99 with four or five nines after the decimal place to ensure that data center never goes down. And if you've got a single reactor that's delivering 300 megawatts, you know, I'm back to 93 to 95% availability. If I've got, you know, let's say an example is I've got six reactors and the data center requires four on a continuous basis. Now I have the ability to establish much higher reliability factors and meet their goal of never going down on the plant. And that has turned out to be a very strong selling factor for the XE100.
And on top of the reliability, which is a great point, is you also have some inherently safe characteristics for that reactor design. Can you talk a little bit about what you're looking at for safety?
Yeah. So again, it translates back to that description of the fuel, right, and the functional containment around that fuel. The fuel is encased in a ceramic. The ceramic has the capability of going to a couple thousand degrees centigrade. Of course, in operational scenarios, we're rarely above 1,000 C. In some, I'll say, accident and anomaly scenarios, we can see 1600, 1700 degrees C, still well below any, you know, what we would refer to as any damage type temperatures for a ceramic. There is the ability at those very high temperatures for isotopes to migrate through the ceramic and end up in the helium pressure boundary. Silver has the potential for migrating out. Cesium has the potential for migrating out. And so you still have some concerns, which is what the NRC is looking for in our safety case, of ensuring that those isotopes don't escape. And so the helium pressure boundary is our defense in depth environment for ensuring that those don't get out. But ultimately, the ability to show that the emergency planning zone for a high-temperature gas-cool reactor, at least for our high-temperature gas-cool reactor, is about 400 meters from the reactor, right, versus a 10-mile radius that we might have on a light water reactor, enables that plant to be sited, whether it's close to a community or close to an industrial need. And so kind of the second advantage that the high-temperature gas-cool reactor provides to someone like Dow, they need very high-temperature steam, a 10-mile-long pipe. You're going to have a lot of losses from the source to the user. And so in the case of this first project on ARDP with Dow Chemical, we're a quarter mile as the crow flies and a couple miles of pipe to deliver that high-temperature steam to their industrial process. And the losses are minimal at those lengths, and so we're able to achieve their economics and their process steam requirements.
Yeah, I mean, the Dow Chemical project is really, really exciting for those of us who watch the industry. Can you just give us a quick update as how things are going down at Seadrift?
Yeah, happily. Let me step back and say what is the scope of Advanced Reactor Demonstration Program for X-Energy, which we refer to as Project Longmont, M-O-T-T. That name came from Dow. And so the full scope of ARDP, or Project Longmont, is broken down for us into six related but independent programs. First is completing the design of the XE-100. When we started ARDP, we were at preconceptual, early conceptual design, and so we are progressing our design through preliminary design and then final design. Second is the licensing of the XE-100, and we run that as a separate program. As been announced in the news recently, we submitted our construction permit application in I think it was the 31st of March, and it was just announced, I think either late last week or early this week, that the NRC has docketed that construction permit application, and we should hear within the next 1 to 2 months on the timing for completion of that, as well as their cost estimate for it. But
That's a really big deal.
We talk a lot within X-Energy that for any advanced reactor company, there is life before your CPA and there is life after your CPA. And in many ways, it is the mark of, are you real or not? So the reality begins, so to speak. Those are two of our programs. Number three is operational readiness, right? We need to put together operations simulators, training environments, both for operators as well as maintenance staff. We need to write all of the operational and maintenance procedures, conduct that training of those operators and maintenance staff, and then ultimately perform the commissioning of the XE-100 plant. So we run that as a separate program as well. Number four is development of our commercial fuel fabrication facility called TX-1. And I'll digress just for a moment on that. TX-1 will be located in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. There's a location that used to be DOE property, I believe. It's referred to as the Horizon Center. And the Horizon Center has been broken up into various lots and we have one of those plots, and we are standing up today a 5 metric ton per year TRISO fuel fabrication capability. We have broken ground on that, and we will be in vertical construction before the end of 2025. Program number 5. Program number 6 is what we refer to as uranium delivery. And so, recognizing that there are actually 2 enrichments that we require for the XE-100. We use both low-enriched uranium pebbles for startup, and then we transition from low-enriched uranium to high-assay low-enriched uranium, enriched at 15.5%. So there is an activity to source a couple metric tons of LEU, which will be done under commercial agreements. And then there's a requirement for high-assay, low-enriched uranium for that first core, and that will be provided by the Department of Energy. And there are a couple different forms that we will receive that high-assay, low-enriched uranium under. So managing the delivery of HALEU and LEU is a non-trivial activity, and so we treat that, again, as a separate program under ARDP.
It sounds like the licensing is going well, though. Is that a good characterization of how things are going with the NRC?
I think that's a good characterization. We recognize that, first of all, it's a great site that we have. It is as flat as could be in terms of construction, laydown area, access. Dow owns the vast majority of the property that's in the area, so gaining access to roads, to areas for construction laydown is pretty easy, and the impact to the environment in the area is also very low. So a lot of the complications associated with siting a new power plant in a particular location, this particular location makes it pretty easy. We're very fortunate to have the Dow Seadrift site as our first location.
And on top of the Dow project with ARDP, you do now have this commitment from Amazon, their investment in working with Energy Northwest and others. Tell us about that. I mean, that's a huge development.
So there's been tacit interest, growing interest over the last several years in how nuclear can support the acceleration and deployment of data centers. I would say 3 years ago, we weren't talking too much about AI, but that certainly has been the fuel to the fire, so to speak, in regards to the pressing need to accelerate the ability to create and operate more data centers faster. The throttling aspect of that deployment is getting the power to run those facilities, and so it was as seen in the news, universally recognized that waiting for the utilities to catch up and put that capacity in place was not going to happen fast enough to enable our domestic hyperscalers to maintain competitiveness in this, what I'll refer to as a $1 trillion competition to win the AI race. And so they had to take the ball into their own hands and figure out a way to run with it. Nuclear is one of those options. We talked about the reliability of power. Therefore, that's why using either whether it's wind or solar power is not part of the equation for making this hyperscaler deployment successful. And nuclear power is a very strong opportunity. All of them are looking to do this in a non-carbonizing or decarbonized way. So all have been looking at it. Each has chosen a different path forward, as we've seen in the news. Microsoft restarting Three Mile Island. Google looking at a power purchase agreement with Kairos. And in the case of Amazon, they chose to make a direct investment in X Energy. And that direct investment helps us get the design done of the XE100, right? Because we operate on the Advanced Reactor Demonstration Program on a 50-50 cost share. We send the government an invoice for $100. They send us $50 back. So we're always looking to match that cost share, and Amazon's investment in X Energy enables us to meet that cost share and close out our non-recurring engineering costs to get to a complete plant design. And at that point, it's all about building and go.
And so are you looking beyond the borders of the United States right now in your business development side of the house? Maybe this is projecting too far ahead, but are you also looking internationally at all?
For several years, we've made, I'm going to say, relatively small investments, in the millions of dollars range in UK. We've done similarly in Canada. And we look at those two environments. Why do we look at those two markets? Mature regulator, already have nuclear assets and nuclear plants that are deployed. They have operators that know how to operate nuclear power plants. And they have the ability for the government to support those kinds of programs, right? In the case of looking in Canada, Ontario Power Generation, it is a crown corporation. And so there is a partnership between industry and government. In UK, there are similar arrangements, a little bit more on the commercial side, but again, a strong regulator, support from the government. EDF is a strong player in that market. So those are the areas that we think have the best external factors to be successful in deployment. And we're strategic about where we deploy our resources, where we deploy our funds. And so we're doing it smartly.
So just in closing, because this has been a great overview of what X Energy is up to, what you're up to, are there any, what are the biggest challenges that the company faces right now when it comes to your first deployment and subsequent deployments?
The first challenge that we're focused on is, as I referred to earlier, getting the design done, right? We need to move out of the non-recurring engineering elements of bringing our paper reactor to the point of manufacturing. And a lot of that work will happen in 2025, 2026, and 2027, right? So getting ourselves to the point of cutting metal and manufacturing components and getting those components into test. And is anybody who's done a product development, from conceptual design through fabrication, recognizes that getting the design done, getting into manufacture, is a great challenge. We've got a super smart, super committed team, I would say the challenge to the industry is that not a lot of this has been done over the last 15 to 20 years, and so there's a bit of learning that we're all doing as we move forward. I would also say, from a challenge perspective, we've all heard this within the industry, which is supply chain. Is the supply chain prepared to support the velocity at which this advanced reactor deployment is going to happen. So right now we're focused on the Dow opportunity and the first four reactors in that plant. We are looking beyond that at up to 12 reactors with Energy Northwest, and the commitment from Amazon that they want at least 5 gigawatts of power by the end of the 2030s, which for us translates into dozens of plants. And so if we're looking at the deployment of dozens of plants over the next 10 to 15 years, is the domestic supply chain prepared to support that volume of work?
Which is a terrific question for a lot of our listeners, because they're in the supply chain industry, many of them. But what would you like our listeners to take away as the one thing to never forget about this conversation?
We're going to see over the next 10 years the application of nuclear in ways that, A, we've never seen in the past. The Dow opportunity, the Dow project at Longmont is one example of taking nuclear and applying it to an industrial process that has never been done before. And that will create the opportunity, the ability for an industry that is extremely hard to decarbonize to look at their opportunities a different way. But not only that, we started out talking about microreactors and the ability to site these relatively long life, relatively small reactors for remote communities and enable them to, you know, kind of break that tie with diesel generators that, you know, that do create, you know, a lot of pollution. It's difficult to get the diesel there. Many times it's subsidized to deliver it, to break those bonds and to have a cleaner solution. And then I'm gonna look a little bit beyond that, Jim, and say we talked about these space applications, right? The ability to get to Mars in half the time by using a nuclear thermal propulsion solution for those spacecraft. I think we're going to see, you know, nuclear used in fascinating ways.
Well, on that very encouraging note, please accept my sincere thanks for providing such a thorough overview of X-Energy and your work at the company and the many projects you have underway. I wasn't aware that you guys had so many fingers and so many pies. It's amazing. You provided, you know, a lot of really good things for our listeners to think about. Thanks very much, and best wishes to you and the entire X-Energy team for continued success.
Thank you so much, Jim. It's great to talk to you.
Great. Well, folks, that wraps up this episode of the Advanced Nuclear Podcast. Thank you, Harlan. At UCAN Power, we believe that nuclear energy is key to powering the American economy in the years and decades ahead. If you feel the same or just want to learn more, please check us out on social media at www.ucanpower.org. Special thanks to the UCAN Power team and to our producer, Ms. Kimberly, who does all the hard work making this podcast happen. If this were Amazon, she'd have a wealth of 5-star reviews. Until next time, this is your host signing off with thanks to you for tuning in to the Advanced Nuclear Podcast.